Welcome to this week's edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill. Joining me, as always, is my colleague, Joe Healy. And we are here. It is September 21 as we record this. And earlier this week, we released the Baseball America's 2022 final update to Baseball America's 2022 recruiting class rankings. So that is the high school and junior college players who arrived on campus this fall final ranking of those classes. You can find that over at baseballamerica.com, the full 25 and the full very in-depth breakdowns, all of that over at baseballamerica.com. We're going to get into those rankings today and talk a little bit about the newcomers in college baseball. So always an exciting time to look at the new freshman class coming in and see how things are stacking up for the next few years there. So yeah, Joe, we're excited about that. It's a nice fall is starting this week officially. And you know, you've got some fall games going on around the country. The weather's starting to get a little more chilly. Like we're college football keeps rolling on. NFL keeps rolling. We're into fall. I think we're comfortable saying we're into fall.
I think that's right. My wife has been on a steady diet of the she's not a pumpkin spice latte person per se, but she enjoys various, although she does have a pumpkin spice latte or two, it's more like, you know, she just like coffees with pumpkin and spiced flavors in them and all that kind of stuff. So that's kind of an official start, although we do have like a last gasp of summer here in Durham. I think the high Thursday this week is 94, but then the high the next day is like 77 or something. So that's going to be a real precipitous drop.
There's definitely a cold front coming through from the Midwest, like it's hitting and then moving east. Like that's a real thing everywhere east on the east side of the country, I think.
I can't wait for my joints to hurt when the temperature drops like 40 degrees within the span of 24 hours. That's the age I am. Also, I'm now... I don't know how my this is the first podcast post knee surgery for me. The one you heard a couple weeks ago was in the can before my knee surgery, which is the magic of show business. We recorded that one early. So now I don't know. Maybe with my knee surgery, maybe that will, with things cleaned up a little bit, maybe that I won't be quite so sensitive to that stuff. But what I am sensitive about with my knee surgery that I did not anticipate was, procedure went fine. It was a scope, for lack of a better way of putting it. So, you know, within a couple of days, I was up and moving around okay, gingerly, but pretty good. And now I've been up and, you know, I can go grocery shopping and stuff like that. I'm not back to doing, you know, physical activities really yet, running and things of that nature. But so that part has actually been kind of okay. The part I did not anticipate, though, is they have to shave my leg to get to my knee, right? Because I have hairy legs. But they shaved like a lot. So it's like probably, I'm looking at my knee now, like probably 5 or 6 inches above the knee and below the knee. So we're talking about a lot of skin there. And now it's growing back and it's kind of itchy. And so like, that's really the situation that has been most troublesome right now is, because I had never, I'm not a competitive swimmer. I had never shaved my legs before. And so that area is not used to having to grow the hair. So now it's a little bit irritated. So Joe's dealing with that, but I don't know, what were we talking about? I just got off on a little bit of a tangent there, but that's how Joe's
we were doing. On 3-0 Duke against 3-0 Kansas this weekend in Lawrence. Cause that's really what I wanted to talk
about. Oh my
about.
Goodness. If that game was in Durham, I might've found a way to get out there. You know, if that game was in Durham, just to drive out and see that, there's a decent amount of that in college football this year where you've got, I mean, those are good stories. Like I have a sneaking suspicion that Kansas is not going to go 12-0, but I have a sneaking suspicion like Kansas looks real enough, and Houston, who they beat last week, is a talented enough team that that's not, and West Virginia too. I mean, those are not completely just, those are talented teams. Kansas feels real enough that we might look up at the end of the year and be like, oh, that team was 8-4 or 9-3 or something. Like that would not shock me. Like, it looks like they have a dude at quarterback and like they've got some things working there. That was a fast turn around there. And it's kind of like to take it back to baseball for a second and try to steer the ship in the right direction. Like we talked about Kansas's transfer class in baseball, and you and I have talked about the Kansas job when that job turned over in the off season and Dan Fitzgerald took over, that like, Kansas basketball, I mean, you're never going to be Kansas basketball. Like that is what it is. And it's a established brand and all that, but you know, it's a, those KU is a, a desired good university that has some history and the you know, kids want to go there. It's, you know, in theory, you know, that place could be successful, but we look at their football and baseball programs for so long and see the struggles, and we define them by their struggles. But the football program is kind of showing a way forward that, hey, you know, you recruit well and put a couple classes together, and, you know, things like this can happen. And that's kind of, I think, as we talk about recruiting and rebooting rosters and all of that kind of stuff, I mean, that is the promise of what, you know, even if you're not recruiting at the tip top 5-star level, which KU football is not, I assume. Actually, I know for certain, I'm not a recruit, Nick, but I can tell you that for certain, they're not recruiting at the top of the sport, but you get the right kind of guys and you can kind of turn a ship around. It doesn't take as long as it used to in a world where players in all sports, but baseball included, are more ready for college than they've really ever been. And also you have the transfer portal and junior college player. You have just so many places to pull players from that something like what KU football is doing this year can be done in baseball. And if we had time to think about it, we could probably come up with some examples. But I think it does show a little bit of a way forward that this is not a situation where you're going to need 4, 5, 6 years if you start moving in the right direction.
This is Lance Leipold's second season in charge of Kansas football. So what I'm hearing, Joe, is that you're saying 2024 Jayhawks regionally bubble watch, like bubble watch for regionals on the diamond with under exactly. Dan Fitzgerald. That's what I'm hearing.
That's verbatim what I said.
Yeah,
that's right. There are challenges. Like, let's the facilities behind, you know, within certainly within the Big 12, especially in a Big 12 where some schools have built recently, but you know, there are challenges there. But, like, you know, it's Kansas we're talking about, you know, like that's a brand. Like, the kids who grow up in Kansas City, which is a very good prep baseball hotbed, just ask Arkansas. Kids grow up in Kansas City wanting to go to KU, and that's powerful. Like, it's not, now they don't know KU baseball as having been anything super successful, but that's very powerful to be a program in a place where kids grow up wanting to go to your school, because all it's going to take is the smallest spark to kind of get that thing going. So anyway, that obviously is a tangent. We're not here to talk KU baseball, but, like, it is related to recruiting. There are some places where all it takes is kind of a spark to ignite something, and then the success starts to build on itself. And recruiting is the lifeblood of that.
Well, Dan Fitzgerald is the new head coach of Kansas. Previously, he was the assistant coach and the recruiting coordinator for LSU.
And we worked it all the way back.
There we go. And LSU has the number one recruiting class this year. It's the third time in the 23-year history of the rankings that LSU brings in the number one class. First time since 2018. And this class is like a behemoth in many respects. And you might see a headline like LSU number one recruiting class, and you think, like, oh, of course, Tommy White and Paul Skeets. Like, I should say this explicitly, like, none of the transfers that for none of the classes we're going to talk about today, transfers did not mean four-year transfers did not factor into these recruiting rankings. Joe ranked the 25 recruiting the top 25 recruiting classes already. We just left transfers as a part of that. This is just what I like to call now traditional recruiting classes, and that means junior college players and primarily high school players. So LSU brings in the number one class with those players. They have four players who were rated as top 100 draft prospects last year. And again, to be clear here, when we say draft prospect, we mean everyone that was eligible for the draft. So they have four players that were rated as top 100 draft prospects. That, I believe, is a record. Like, I've struggled to verify that, because when you rank recruiting classes for 23 years, like, various systems get employed and different writers are responsible for it, and we don't all catalog things in the exact same ways. But from what I can tell, no recruiting class has ever brought in that many players who had that kind of draft pedigree. UCLA had three last year. Three has been done. Four, I believe, is novel. And so that it's got impressive depth at the top. It's a deep class overall. There's just a lot of talent in it. And that all of that happens despite the fact that LSU lost five recruits to the draft. That includes, you know, a couple first round picks, like they lost five players from this recruiting class that signed and went pro following the draft. And they still brought in as much talent as they did. And it's still the number one class in the country. And that is really impressive because on signing day last year, Vanderbilt had the number one class. Vanderbilt and LSU were a close 1-2. Well, Vanderbilt lost five like day one picks or first round picks. I'd have to look at my notes again. And, you know, they drop a little bit because of that. They still have a top 10 class, but, you know, they do fall. LSU lost five recruits. Now, they weren't as high profile, obviously, as the Vanderbilt group, but they still were able to put together this number one class. And it's really a testament to the depth that they had to begin with, that they were able to sustain that kind of loss and still have the elite talent at the top and the overall depth of the class that they do.
Yeah. I mean, that's the part that really floored me reading, you know, what you wrote about these classes, is that teams that have that kind of attrition in their class just don't maintain that kind of ranking as you detail there. And usually I would assume the team that's number one in the final recruiting classes post-draft is often a team that kind of got through the draft and kind of maybe, you know, got away with some things in terms of, I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean got some players to campus they didn't expect. And LSU did, you know, Jaden Newt chief among them, but they had some attrition. And so it does speak to the depth of the class, which is kind of an interesting, this class is going to be interesting to monitor over the next several years, because what kind of blankets over recruiting classes in general is the realization, and I think you and I have talked about this before, is that it's important to kind of understand what we're talking about when we talk about recruiting classes. And you see this when you re-rank the recruiting classes however many years later, is that in even the best recruiting classes, you're looking to get a couple of stars out of it, a couple of solid contributors, and then maybe a smattering of a couple more players who contribute at some point or another. And then most of the class is going to end up being filler at best. And so with this class being as deep as it is, that's going to be interesting to watch, because we have to assume, right? Maybe next year's class is a little smaller for LSU, but maybe not. They're going to continue, because Jay Johnson is the recruiter he is, they're going to continue to recruit the highest of the high-end talent they can get. I have to assume they're going to continue to play in the transfer portal. They're going to keep bringing in class after class. It's like the Kentucky basketball situation, right? Where it's like, if you're not a real dude right away at Kentucky basketball, like you're going to get, you know, recruited over, and like, you're just going to get beat out and stuff like that. I mean, baseball is a little different than that, because you have such a bigger roster and there are little roles that players can take, but that will be an interesting thing to watch, is does this class break the mold in terms of, you know, having 4, 5, 6 real stars come out of it? Does the depth end up being, do they end up having, you know, a dozen guys who are big time contributors at some point in their career at LSU? I mean, so will this class, when we look at it 4 years down the road, have looked fundamentally different? Or do we find out that just the numbers are such, when you look at the following recruiting classes, the fact that you can really only, between pitchers and position players, you've really only got like 15 guys who are like really contributing as the main core. Are those limitations such that you can just never have a recruiting class that provides that greater level of depth? Or again, does this class completely break the mold in a way that we've not seen? And I believe either end of that spectrum, I think.
It's also interesting. And like, I don't want to go terribly far down the road that I'm about to start taking us down. But A&M in football this year brought in the number one ranked recruiting class, and by some accounting, that was maybe the best recruiting class of like the modern era, however they define that in football recruiting terms. And obviously there was a lot of discussion about how A&M arrived at such a recruiting class, but that's not the point that I'm interested in here. It's just the idea that, okay, well, they brought in all that talent. What about the transfer portal? Like, how, give it 2 years, how many players are in College Station? And I mean, that's just where we are in college sports right now, that is a thought. LSU brought in two very highly regarded catchers, actually three pretty highly regarded catchers. And catcher is obviously a position where only one at a time can play. And like, you know, some of them have the athleticism to play elsewhere, but you know, that is a very specific position. And so like what happens with those guys? And, you know, with pitching, you can never have enough of it, right? But also there are still only three weekend spots. And I, you know, so you do wonder, and maybe you just have to collect as much talent as you can in this world and let the chips fall where they may in the end. But it's going to be interesting to see how various approaches get taken by coaches as they build recruiting classes. And then also, yeah, in the process that I do 4 or 5 years down the road, where did these classes end up and how many of these players played massive roles and how many players played pretty good roles for some other team, you know, that all of that is going to be interesting to see. But in the immediate, there's no reason for LSU to be thinking about that. You can just dream right now. Like this is September of most of these players freshman year. Like you could dream any dream you want on them. This is when they have the most upside. Everyone's feeling very good about them, and you can feel very, very good about this LSU class.
Yeah, dream a dream indeed, Les Mis style. Is that right? Is that Les Mis?
I think so.
Yeah, I feel I'm letting it down. I feel like I'm the musical guy on this pod, and I just anyway. I promise I won't take us further down this road. But you just touched on something that I find fascinating. I will just sum it up, kind of to say this: in this world of the transfer portal, because you're hitting on something, and let's be clear, we're talking about the upper level of college, because at the mid-major and below level, you still kind of like, yes, there are different challenges in the mid-major level where it's like you find an under-recruited guy and he pops in year one and he wants to go to the SEC, understandably, after that year. Like all, but setting that aside, it's just a different concern. At the top level of college recruiting, though, in these power conferences, the question I have is how do you recruit your role players? Because you have to have them, or at least in theory. I guess if you have, you know, a lineup of all SEC players, then I guess your bench doesn't matter that much. But
LSU baseball in 2022 is trying to challenge that assertion.
We're going to find out. Yeah. But I'm fascinated. How do you recruit your role players? Because on paper, you need them. You need a fourth good bullpen arm. You need a second catcher. Maybe you need a, you know, there's going to be an injury. You need somebody who can ably fill in, like all of that stuff. But it's going to be harder to recruit those role players because now you can kind of carve out places in a recruiting class for those kinds of guys who you might say, okay, this kid is not a 2023 guy in terms of when he plays, he's maybe a 24 guy. And there probably are some players, maybe they're not big time draft prospects, maybe they're preferred walk-ons, whatever it is, who will be available to fill those roles. But I think it gets harder for sure, because that guy who's a BA 500 guy who maybe wasn't a super elite prospect, you know, he's 400 on the BA 500, a guy, but not a elite guy. That kind of player though, is maybe not inclined to wait around. And that's not me saying anything that hasn't been thought about, but I do think it is interesting in the context of you can recruit stars who are going to play right away and be real dudes for you from day one. How adept though are these staffs at recruiting your depth in a way that allows you to hold on to a guy so that you have experience depth down the road? Or is that what the portal's for? I mean, that's, you know, just kind of an interesting question to monitor as we go along.
No doubt about that. And you know, the other interesting thing about this LSU class is that the way it was put together, you know, because Paul Maneri retires at the end of the 2021 season and baseball recruiting is still on a very aggressive early period, that means a lot of these players committed to that staff. Well, that staff's all gone. Then Jay Johnson gets hired, and some of the guys actually like had to recommit to him that they had reopened their recruiting because, you know, they didn't know him. And, you know, so a couple of them do recommit to him. He adds some with his first staff of Jason Kelly and Dan Fitzgerald, who both now this last summer were hired away to be head coaches. So the group that's there now, like Jay is still there, but he has new assistant coaches. So the guys that are in this recruiting class, are going to be coached by Wes Johnson. Like that's a huge selling point for LSU moving forward, but they didn't commit to that. And so it's kind of just interesting to see how the evolution of this whole class comes together, and to think about what LSU might be able to do going forward with their new staff. Not that the old staff was bad or not good at recruiting in any way, but they hired Josh Jordan away from Duke, and Josh Jordan was the assistant coach of the year in 2018. And Wes Johnson, of course, has Omaha experience as a pitching coach and also has big league experience as a pitching coach. Those guys really know what they're doing in terms of coaching and recruiting. And Jay Johnson is an incredible recruiter himself. I guess what I'm getting at here is this probably is just the start of something for LSU on the recruiting trail.
Indeed, sure seems that way. I think it feels like we're entering just kind of a new era a little bit in general in recruiting. I started to say this and maybe I'm now questioning a little bit, but it does feel like we kind of are entering a world where we're talking about, okay, the transfer portal is one thing. I think that changes recruiting a little bit. But we're also looking at a future where, the scholarship, limitation maybe gets lifted or increased or whatever it is. And maybe we'll have extra coaches down there. It just feels like we kind of are on the precipice of some floodgates being opened in the way, maybe not all of college baseball, but certain programs in college baseball are able to recruit. So it is kind of, now obviously LSU does not have those benefits right this minute, but they're pulling in a class like that. And it does kind of lead you to think about programs like LSU and others, particularly in the SEC, would be able to do in a future that we are looking at in terms of some of the legislation stuff coming down the pike.
All right. So LSU is number one. That is, like we said, it's not only the number one class this year, but it's a highly impressive class if you just rate it historically as well. We're going to get to some of the other classes in that top 25 in a second. But first, check this out. All right, so LSU number one, Ole Miss, the reigning champs, number two. They actually made a really significant move up the rankings since signing day. Part of that was just good luck in the draft. Part of it was that some of their players had good springs and just got better. The players are allowed to do that. Louisville, though, is who I kind of want to talk about here at number three. The Cardinals are no stranger to putting together prominent classes under Dan McDonald. This is the highest ranked class in program history, however, just barely, but it's the highest ranked class in program history. And it comes at a time coming off of these guys were recruited largely coming off of the Brendan McKay success, all those Omaha trips that the Cardinals took at the time. And, so that all of that paid some dividends here on the trail. And it's an impressive group that Louisville has coming in, and one that, we think highly of Louisville looking at next year, but there's also room for some of these players to come in and make an immediate impact. So I'm excited to see how that works out for them.
Yeah. Same here. I think when we talk about feeling like being on the precipice of something, or we talk about the directionality of some of this stuff, it does feel like this is a Louisville program in the big picture that is also on the bounce back up. Right. They haven't been to Omaha in a couple, and like that's just the standard Louisville set. They haven't really been Omaha contenders. They got to a super regional last year. I guess that's maybe not being quite fair to them, but I say that to say like that they are heading back in a positive direction and building towards something that might look a little bit like the Louisville machine that we had seen before. And they continue to do a good job, as we've talked about before, at being not just a recruiting program, but a development program. And there was a whole class of guys, especially in the lineup last year, that really kind of embody that, guys who went from role player to star throughout the course of their 3 or 4 years on campus. But I look at them being ranked where they are here in this top 25 and do think that that is a sign that, hey, okay, like maybe this is a move back towards, this team has not been far off. Let me be clear, the last couple of years, but they were a step behind what the standard had been set there at Louisville. And perhaps this is a signal of what's to come for the Cardinals in becoming the type of team that is back to competing for national titles and getting back to being a program that I think we all looked around at. If you looked up in, you know, 2018 or 2019 and kind of looked around and thought like, yeah, this team is going to win a national title sometime pretty soon. It's just a matter of when. Like I said, they stepped back from that a little bit, but now perhaps they are getting back in that direction.
It was tight between Ole Miss and Louisville for number two and number three. I'm not going to be surprised if you look up and Gavin Killian is the number one recruit in this class. If he or Will Vierling, who's a catcher, also from those two guys are from Wisconsin, and they just read like the kind of players that Louisville turns into stars there. They have a couple guys, Patrick Forbes and Tucker Bibben, who were could be two-way players, but probably going to explode on the mound and, you know, maybe were kind of caught in between of like, oh, what are they going to be? Who are they? Like in 3 years at Louisville, they're probably going to be star type player, like who they are. We're going to figure out what they can do. I feel like sometimes those two-way players like Jared Poland, I guess I can't just keep saying they're all going to be stars, because like we know that that's not how this works. But Jared Poland came in a few years ago as a two-way player and took him a couple years, but ultimately found like a really prominent spot on their pitching staff and was a good player for them. And like, maybe that's what's going to happen with Forbes and Bibben. Like I mentioned, a number of players that really fit the kind of profile that Louisville knows how to develop, that has a lot of history at coming good at Louisville. And so I'm pretty optimistic about what this Louisville class can be. Slightly down, jumping to five on the rankings, you have Oregon. Now, Oregon is the top Pac-12 class this year. And so first of all, I just find it interesting that a lot of the Pac-12 schools have been recruiting really well lately. Not necessarily putting like stacking top 10 class after top 10 class, but you know, UCLA was the number one class in the country a year ago. Oregon checks in at number five this year. Oregon State was really high a year ago. Stanford has been in the top 10 recently and is pretty good at stacking top 25 classes. So first of all, like the Pac-12 seems like they're recruiting pretty well. But secondly, this Oregon class, Mark Wazikowski has not been back in Eugene terribly long. This is kind of the first big class that they've had. And it's a really impressive one, both in terms of depth and high-end talent. It's really good in terms of hitters, which is not surprising. You know, they kind of need that right now, just given what they've turned over the last couple of years. And that's also what Mark Wazikowski's specialty is. So like them finding good hitters, like I'm pretty excited about the idea that they went out and found position players that they think they can turn into regulars and more in that Ducks lineup.
There's a lot of excitement about this. You and I have both heard that this coaching staff is really excited about this group. So it's no surprise to see them here at five. Some interesting things here, just for me too, is it's another class that's a couple of guys with some, you know, big league bloodlines. Jackson Jaha, the son of or Brewer slugger John Jaha, and Turner Spoljarek, Paul Spoljarek's kid. So you've got that there, and it is an interesting kind of big picture observation you made about the Pac-12, just because there is a lot of, obviously the football and the realignment part of it is a whole separate thing. But even in baseball, we've done a lot of hand wringing about the West Coast, but you're right. And then it's not just, it'd be one thing if it was just UCLA and they were putting together top 10 classes, although I guess UCLA will soon be a Big Ten program, as weird as that is. And I have to keep reminding myself, but it's not just one program doing this. Like there is a pretty good swath of programs in the Pac-12 that are carrying their weight here. And, you know, Oregon is you know, we know that Mark Wazikowski is a very good recruiter and has a good reputation that way. And we had questions though about, hey, as a head coach, like we saw that he got Purdue going pretty quickly with a veteran group. And then, you know, he moved on to Oregon before he was really able to kind of rebuild Purdue there. But, you know, you may remember, listener, that if you've really been listening to us for a few years, like I think on a recruiting podcast, at some point, we talked about one of the late Wasikowski recruiting classes at Purdue. They had some guys they lost to the draft and had some guys with some buzz there. And so he was doing some things there and didn't get to see it come to fruition. And I say all that to say, we went into last year talking about, okay, how does Oregon kind of build on hosting in 2021? The 2022 team was good again. It didn't quite live up to that standard, but it was right there in the Pac-12 again. And now with this talent influx, I think you start to look up and you start to look at Oregon as, hey, maybe this is the next club in the Pac-12 to be in that upper crust group with obviously now Stanford and Oregon State and UCLA. The road is going to get a little bit harder for those upwardly mobile Pac-12 teams, because I think Oregon, which had been prior to Wasikowski a little bit down, I think those days are looks like they're coming to an end anyway.
Oklahoma State is in here in the top 10 at number 8. They, of course, lost the number 1 overall pick in the draft in Jackson Holliday, but they did a lot of work late to, you know, kind of, they realized Jackson Holliday was not going to come. I think they knew that. And so they were able to get in there and get a couple players that became available following coaching changes. And they're really high-end players. They added Nolan Schubert, who'd been committed to Michigan until Eric Backich left. And they added Bull Sylvester, who'd been committed to Washington until Lindsey Meigs retired. And both of those guys added, you know, they did a good job at really retaining their talent other than Holiday through the draft. And then they added those guys. And so I was just impressed by the way that they worked, and they have the number 1 Big 12 recruiting class.
Yeah. Just quickly on Oklahoma State. I mean, and they've had some, you know, staff changes throughout their time. I mean, Justin Seeley hasn't been there that long, but I think under Josh Holiday, one thing that Oklahoma State has done really well is that they seem to be pretty savvy about using recruiting to not necessarily, I don't mean fill needs on the roster, although that is also true, but I mean, there are years when they lean a little harder into traditional recruiting, and last year they were really in on the transfer portal, and some years they're a little more, feels like JUCO heavy, and some years they're a little more heavy on raw arms, high school arms. They seem to do a pretty, they're not, they don't just have one path, is I guess what I'm saying. They do a pretty good job of kind of understanding what each class should do and what each class should be, because they don't, from year to year, it feels like Oklahoma State's classes look a little bit different. But they're always highly ranked and they're always well thought of. And so I think that is a real testament to that staff, that they have a good feel for kind of what they're looking for and how it fits into what they're doing.
I think that's right. And, you know, they certainly have done a good job recruiting kind of overall under Josh Holiday, but now, especially with Obrate built, excited about what that could mean for the program moving forward as well. So those are like the 4 conferences that are represented in the rankings, which is kind of crazy. Michigan was on track to have a ranked class until Eric Backich left, and that class disintegrated. Several of them followed him to Clemson, but not everyone. Obviously, I've already mentioned Nolan Schubert going elsewhere. Rutgers maybe has the best class in the Big 12, which is kind of crazy on its own, but it wasn't a top 25 class, obviously. And, you know, you look at some of the other conferences that occasionally break through, the American most notably. It's just been another, like, we talk about this in so many ways, talent and power and everything else in college baseball and college sports overall is just getting increasingly consolidated in the power conferences. And that's reflected here in this year's recruiting rankings again, which means you would expect that for the next couple of years, that's going to be reflected on the field as well. Now, that it doesn't completely work like that. You know, Southern Miss will have unearthed some gems or developed some gems that we just aren't recognizing right now. And that's just them as an example. It could be Grand Canyon. It could be San Diego. It could be Kent State. It could be anyone. It's going to happen somewhere. But by and large, the major conference schools continue to get it done at a level above even the good quality, consistent mid-major programs.
Yep, that's true. And, you know, stars, to use the phrase in college football recruiting, stars matter, but they're not the be-all end-all like you talk about. And I think there's even some mobility within the power conference programs that we see here, right? I mean, we talked about it before, so we don't need to belabor it, but, you know, Duke has a ranked class again, and that's something that five or certainly 10 years ago, but even 5 years ago, we probably would have thought was crazy, right? You know, in some programs like Clemson, for example, that have put good classes together, they're not new to this, but the results in the field haven't necessarily matched that. And so that's a program that's kind of looking to pick themselves up by the bootstraps. So there's that. And so you do kind of get some variability within that. So, but yes, it is, you know, there's no stray BYU in this group. Like, you know, BYU had a ranked class a couple of years ago. There's nothing like that here. And that's just the way of the world. That's kind of the way all of this is heading. But again, it doesn't, the beauty of it is it's not going to play out like this. And that's why we play the games. And that's why it's fun is, you know, we can sit here and these are going to be 25 of the most talented teams in college baseball over the next handful of years. And not just because of these recruiting classes, but in general, but it's not going to play out that way on the field. And that's why we enjoy it. It would be a lot less fun if this was literally how we determine national champions.
It would be incredible, though, if somebody gave you that kind of power.
That really would be. They're like, you know what? Let's just call it. Although if there was going to be any year, it might be this year where it's like LSU has done what they've done, where it's like, you know what? Let's just put LSU in the AL Central or something and just see what happens, you know, and let the other teams fight it out. But yes, I mean, it's going to be a lot more fun to actually see this stuff play out.
And it will soon enough. And you know, that's also part of why we re-rank classes, not just to squeeze the recruiting, you know, juice one more time. It's because it is something of a legitimate exercise to look and say, like, all right, I did this based on hype, based on expectations, but here it is based on reality, you know, and recognize the difference between those two. And hopefully we all learn something along the way, but that is part of the reason why we look back at the classes and we don't just look ahead with the recruiting classes. We look back at the re-rank. So check back in like 4 years, 5 years, and we'll have this class re-ranked. A lot of baseball to be played before that can happen, though, and we'll have it all covered for you over at Baseball America in the magazine, on the website, baseballamerica.com, and here on the podcast, which we are continuing to do weekly throughout the offseason. So make sure you're subscribed to the Baseball America podcast on your favorite podcasting app, be that Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. We've been doing a Clubhouse Conversation series where we invite on a guest from around college baseball. Been a couple of weeks since we did one due to various scheduling things, but we'll be back with another episode in that series next week. So look for that again in your favorite podcasting app. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Ted Cahill. Joe is at Joe Healy BA. And until next week, we want to thank you all for listening. For Joe, I'm Teddy. We'll see you next time.